here we go, here we go. Here we go. I am back, baby. The show is back. The show that anyone that has known me over the last several years least suspected as the one I would bring back. Of all the shows I've done, this is the one I think everyone least suspected because I only got 7 episodes into it. So let's catch you up to exactly what happened. This was always supposed to be the show. When I left the Pat McAfee Show and Heartland Radio in 2020, it was to do stand-up comedy full-time and a show like this part-time. That was the original plan. And it started off awesome. I was booked out on stand-up weekends from that January all the way through September with like 3 weekends off. And 2 months into me being a full-time stand-up comedian and leaving a job that paid me very well by people that treated me very well, the world came to an end. Well, it came to a giant pause. God pulled the emergency brake and everything stopped for 2 years. No live entertainment, no live anything. We couldn't leave our damn houses. So I adapted. I tried a handful of different kinds of podcasts, but they all involved other people, all except for 1041. And here's the deal. When you're doing a podcast with other people, it's cool for a while. During the pandemic, when everyone's locked down, but as the pandemic began to thaw, their lives started coming back and schedules shifted, priorities changed, and it was hard to maintain multiple schedules and keep those shows alive. Now, when this show ended, the last episode of this show was released on January 25th, 2021. I had gotten neck deep into what I consider the biggest true crime discovery of my lifetime. And the subsequent investigation into that. And when it became abundantly clear to Stuart Huff and I that what we thought we had found was actually true, we went to work. We put everything on pause. We spent our life savings developing our investigation into pitch materials in order to secure a production company so we could shop our story, this discovery, as a true crime documentary series. And we were competitive as shit. 11 different production companies fought for that thing. 11 of them wanted it. All wanted it. Badly wanted it. And we settled on one. And we worked hard with that production company to tweak the pitch materials that we had to make them exactly how they felt they needed to be to pitch Hollywood. All the streamers. And just when we got all of those new and improved pitch products ready to go to market, Hollywood stopped. Someone pulled the damn emergency brake on Hollywood. First a writer's strike, then an actor's strike. They're not buying shit. I have the worst timing of any person on the planet. Quit a dream job to do stand-up comedy full-time. The pandemic hits. 2 years, the world's down. I make the true crime discovery of a lifetime, and I prove it to be true. Spend my life savings to get it in the hands of a production company who also believed in it, and we hit Hollywood just in time for them to shut down for 2 years, or however long it's been. If I hit the lottery tomorrow, everybody fuck like crazy because there's going to be no tomorrow. It's the zombie apocalypse. That's the kind of luck I have. If I hit the lottery today for a gajillion dollars, tomorrow there's an apocalypse. I have no doubt. But my point is, it's all fine now. I'm in the best place I've been in a very long time. I am partnered with some very cool and competent people in our own production company. I've got a true crime podcast that I'm very, very passionate about. I have this podcast now that I get to bring back that I'm very, very passionate about. I'm completely confident the true crime documentary series will get sold and will get made. So we are good. And I tell you all that just so you know, now was the perfect time to finally bring back Here We Go. And coming back strong out of the gate with one of my favorite people, one of the first comedians to be nice to me when I was first starting out. He was a powerhouse in the local Indianapolis scene, and he had no reason to be nice to me, yet he took the time to do so. And he has become a Midwest juggernaut. He's one of the most creative minds I've ever had the pleasure to be around. From his stand-up to his alter ego on social media, to his writing, to film projects that he has in the works, to kick-ass podcasts, The Field Trip, which is a topical podcast, an interview podcast, kind of like this one, to his TV and film podcast that focuses on the horror genre, They're Coming to Get You. Quite possibly the coolest name for a podcast I've ever heard. And when I found out he had all that going on, I hit him up on the phone and I was like, hey, buddy, I'm bringing this show back. How would you like to be my first guest for the reboot? And he was like, oh, man, I lost my phone a while back. Now all my contacts were restored. I don't have your number anymore. Who is this? And I was like, this is Todd McComas. And he was like, Todd who? And I was like, Todd McComas. And, you know, after a couple of weeks, we were able to work it out. So I'm very, very stoked that he's here. And I am extremely excited to learn more about his new podcast, They're Coming to Get You. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Brent Terhune. Here we go, here we go. Brent, thanks for joining me, buddy.
Good to see you, Todd. Thanks for having me back on. I think have I been on the show before?
Not on this particular show, but as you know, I have hosted 127 different podcasts in the last 5 or 6 years. So
hey, it's good to be on this iteration.
Dude, So I already gave you all the accolades. You know, you're an awesome stand-up comedian, somebody I've always looked up to, an awesome writer. All things comedy, you're masterful at.
Well, thanks.
What I didn't know was what a horror fan you are. Mm-hmm. And you just had me on your podcast, The Field Trip, which is more topic-based. You bring a slug like me on there and talk for a little bit. But this your other podcast, They're Coming to Get You, which I love that name, by the way.
Yeah.
It dives into the horror genre. Tell me more about that.
Horror genre, yeah. They're Coming to Get You is the title. It's from Night of the Living Dead. Remember when Johnny says, they're coming to get you, Barbara. So, of course, we named our fans, what little we have, Barbaras. They're all Barbaras.
I love it.
And it's myself and a guy named Gavin Eddings, another comedian. And every week we choose a horror movie and we watch it. We dissect it and we try to be funny about it. So, you could listen to other horror movie podcasts and get the good dissection, but I think also you're going to get that plus us being funny as well.
I mean, I love that because it just lends itself so much to humor. For one, some horror movies, I think you'll agree, like they work because they're bad.
Oh, yeah.
But there's beauty within it, and that's kind of part of the just being a fan of that particular style within the genre, right?
Yeah. And both of us, Gavin and I, are big horror fans. So I think we're passionate about it and we're going to be doing it anyway. That's like if somebody's like, if I want to do a podcast or talk about something, I'm like, well, do the thing that you're already doing because you're right. Already passionate about it, you know? So we pick a new movie every week. And we do the season format. So we'll do 10 episodes and then we'll do a recap episode. And we have fake awards that we give out for best final girl, best nudity, most annoying character, best movie, stuff like that. So that one's kind of us just chatting and it's just fun to give out fake awards and talk about, hey, here's these 10 movies that really have nothing to do with anything. And then we recap them.
I love it. I need to dive deeper into the horror movie genre because I am a fan of it. It's just I spend so much time in true crime and these other genres that lacks. But paranormal shit, I love. Mm-hmm. I love anything with extraterrestrial shit.
Cryptids.
So, but I love the minds behind fiction in horror, though, because I just want to hang out with those people all the time, whoever creates that stuff.
Yeah, well, you can look over my shoulder right here, this picture. It's right here. It's the picture of Bigfoot. crossing that creek bed, I met the guy who, Bob Gimlin, who took that picture. And whether, and he, we got a picture with him and he signed it. And whether you think that's real or not, Bigfoot's real and that photo's real. It always, I saw that video when I was a kid and it scared the shit out of me. And a little kid, you don't know what's real and what's not. But whether that video is real and he's telling the truth, I don't care, because that still means something to me. Enough to where I have it framed on my wall over there.
I love it. I saw a documentary, I think, that had that guy and the guy claiming he was the one in the Bigfoot suit, kind of going back and forth.
Bob Hieronymus, I think, is his name. And I only know that because his last name is Hieronymus.
How could you forget it?
Yeah, yeah. So whether that stuff is real or not is debatable, but it's also, it's just more fun to think that stuff is real. You know, you were talking about aliens and paranormal stuff. It's more fun. And maybe you're lacking in your horror knowledge. I don't know if you would say you're lacking, but some, you're dealing in true crime. You're dealing in the macabre. And I think there's only so much of that the human spirit could take before you say, I got to watch some mindless stuff. Because producer wife is that way. We'll watch a bunch of horror movies, and then one night she'll be like, can we just do something light tonight?
I should have looked up the name of this movie that just came out recently. People were making a big deal about it. And a buddy,
Barbarian.
Barbarian. Yes. Yeah. What did you think of Barbarian?
I liked it, and there's a big twist, so I won't give the big reveal away, but it starts out with like an Airbnb situation.
Yes.
Where two people show up, and this is in the first 15 minutes, so it's not a huge giveaway, but two people show up. One is Bill Skarsgård, who played Pennywise in the latest It movies, and they show up, oh, we both accidentally booked this Airbnb. Which, yes. that could be, you know, I feel for women traveling alone, anybody traveling alone, but especially women. But it's this girl shows up, Bill Skarsgård shows up, and it's got an ominous feel, and there's a twist to it. But it's one of those where that could be real life stuff, because we're all riding in strangers' cars now.
Yeah.
We're all staying in their house, and you hope that everything is on the up and up. You hope that, hey, there's not a guy that lives in the attic that we didn't know about. Because I think that's a Hulu show. It's on one of the networks, and I haven't watched it, but it's the phenomenon of somebody living in your house and you didn't know they were there.
Yes, like the squatting situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole thing about that, and people like living in people's attics and shit for months.
And there's a term for it, because that's the name of the show, and I can't remember it. But
I
Barbarian,
either.
I think it's a good, interesting horror movie, and that was written by a comedian. I think one of the guys from the Whitest Kids You Know.
Okay, well that makes sense, because there's a lot of humor in it, which I enjoy a good campy horror movie.
And, yeah,
I think you kind of could lump that in there. But
Zach Kreger, I think is how you say his name.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So I love those. I loved Cabin in the Woods and mm-hmm. anything like that, where they build humor within it, because I don't know. It's just like some of these premises are ridiculous.
Yeah.
But when you can make them still also kind of scary
mm-hmm.
and then acknowledge that it's a ridiculous premise by adding that humor in there, and you're doing the humor well. Mm-hmm. I don't know that there's any movie watching experience that gets any better than that.
And it's a good release of tension, because I heard somewhere somebody said, and I wrote it down on my phone, it was that significant, but it was talking about comedy and horror are both a release of tension. We're
right.
all trying to solicit a certain response, whether that be laughter or terror or fright or whatever. And it's a buildup. And that's like, you see so many comics that are horror fans and vice versa. And I think also with comedy and horror, it's a reflection of society. So usually with Saw, I think during the Iraq War, you got a lot of torture porn. You got a lot of Guantanamo Bay type stuff, or Paranormal Activity. It was kind of, we all have a camera somewhere or something. So that's not always true for the horror genre, but it's always like a reflection of what's going on in society. because usually the scariest thing, you know, is real life because you've seen it.
Right,
you know?
Right, right. When you find a really good horror movie and mm-hmm. someone who the creator, whether it be the writer or the director's vision of what was written or whatever, mm-hmm. when they really knock it out of the park and they create something for us that's truly scary, like, do you experience that as much as you did when you were younger? How often are you finding one that like, oh boy, that really got me?
It's not often, but I'm probably jaded and desensitized to it. Cause you know, some people will say, how can you watch all that stuff? And it's like, well, I don't want to watch the news.
Right.
Cause that's worse, you know?
Right. Right.
My wife and I were just talking about what movies are truly scary. And you know, she was like, I don't find any of them scary. There was like a few, but it's some of those where it's few and far between where what really scares me anymore. But I also appreciate the craft. The kills are always fun when there's deaths involved. How can you do that in a creative way? But if do you have like a certain movie that you think is the scariest or a few?
A lot of them go back to when I was younger, I guess.
I think that's it, as we were. Yeah. We have so much stuff tied into being young and not, I don't know. I guess you're more easily scared when you're a kid, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, but I can like watch something now and realize, oh, this is scary for people. Like,
oh yeah.
I recognize it's kind of like we're comedians and sometimes you ever catch yourself watching a really brilliant comedian
mm-hmm.
and you don't find yourself laughing as much as you just, you're in appreciation of it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is going to be very hilarious for other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're kind of inside it. So I'll catch myself doing that sometimes now. I'm trying to think of a recent example, but throughout my lifetime, like being a I don't know, middle schooler or maybe a freshman in high school mm-hmm. when Nightmare on Elm Street came out, Freddy Krueger.
Yeah.
Fuck me. Nightmare City. Like I didn't sleep for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was really scary. Poltergeist.
And that the thing about Poltergeist is directed by Steven Spielberg, Mr. Hollywood family-friendly blockbuster, and that movie's like PG, because we did do that on They're Coming to Get You. And that's not my movie. It's I don't have attachments to it, but it's like one of those cursed films is what they'll call it, because there's a scene where the skeletons are coming up where the pool's going to be, and those are real human skeletons. You know, yeah. Like... And it's, I think in Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they used a real skeleton because it was cheaper to get the real one than to have a fake one.
Isn't that weird?
It is weird, but I guess it's like a real one's already there. There's no manufacturing to it.
Right.
It's just odd to use real human body parts, you know?
It is. I forgot about Texas Chainsaw Massacre. I haven't seen the remake, but it is in my queue.
Yeah.
Or I don't know.
It's like
a prequel,
2003.
Right?
There's a... That franchise has some of the worst horror movies you're ever going to see.
Yeah.
Watch the first one, in my opinion, and then there's like a 2003 remake with Arlie Ermey, which is really good.
Okay. All right, so I need to check that out. The first one, because I was young, scared the living daylights out of me. Because for one, that's something that could happen.
Well, it's that case, the Leatherface, but then also... Norman Bates, and then who is the other one? Hannibal Lecter were all based on Ed Gein.
Yeah, okay. They just took certain aspects of what mm-hmm. he did and his personality and
when
spread
you're
them out.
Digging up corpses and making lampshades out of human skin. You have nipple belts and obsessed with Mother and like those, because we've covered all three of those movies now on the show. And it's you see the roots of Ed Gein, and then you learn the real case of this guy was dressing up as a woman and digging up his mother and all kinds of weird stuff.
Yeah, I consider Ed Gein probably the worst monster of all the serial killers.
Okay, I'd have to think about that, but you would know better than me.
Yeah, he was just really, really horrible. You know,
yeah.
Like He was extra. Like, you know, I think even other serial killers, like, he's a little much. You know
what
I mean?
Even, could you calm it down, please?
Right, right. Yeah. So if you were to, like, craft, because you and I are both trying to get into screenwriting.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to craft the perfect horror movie, what are the key elements you're focusing on?
Oh, I think soundtrack is really important. The score. I'm a huge John Carpenter fan, and like that, his music is a character within itself. It's, and you know, I'm a huge fan, so I'm biased, but I listen to his music, not necessarily the horror scores, but he just does music.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really good. It sets a mood and a tone. You know, a lot of movies would be so much different if it was Back That Ass Up instead of this piano instrument, you know, like music in a movie is so important.
Like in Halloween, just that creepy, you know, the piano keys.
Yeah.
Whenever Michael was approaching, which kind of they use that Jaws effect of, you know, show me the shark. And I mean, without that, it's not nearly the same movie.
No, and because I think he played it for people and they said, it's good, but it's not scary. So he did all the work, I think, in one or two days. And I think it's attributed as the Bowling Green Orchestra is what how he listed himself as. But wow. It's that dun dun dun. We, even people that haven't seen Jaws, do that in a pool.
Right.
And I think you hook somebody up to a heart monitor watching horror movies and you hear even just the music psychologically gets you going. You're going to be a little more creeped out than with no music. So I think music is a great, important aspect. And I think you have to have a good baddie. Like Michael Myers or Jason, and if you're looking for the franchise, you got to have somebody that's bad but still likable that we want to see on screen more. Like I watched Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer with Michael Rooker. Have you ever seen that movie?
I haven't.
You don't have to because it's so brutal. That was one that producer wife said, I saw it once and I won't watch it again. And it's not really.
Is that offensive or is that?
Yeah, there's a lot of, there's rape scenes in it, and like, I'm not there's stuff that I've just avoided for years, because I know, hey, it's rapey, and that's not fun for me, I don't know,
right.
It's just like a little too real life in my fantasy, you know?
Yeah, like that's why, like Death Wish with Charles Bronson is touted, I always like, oh, it's one of my favorite Charles Bronson movies, but then I forget about the rape scene that opens the damn thing, and I'm like, oh, I can't even watch that today. Like,
It's, and you've dealt with it with true crime and stuff, but that's not fun. That's not, you know,
leave the rape out of it. I say, you know, like you can still make it plenty scary,
or you don't have to show it and you can, you know, there's everything, but it's going to strike a chord with most people anyway.
Right.
But like, even with Freddy Krueger, you mentioned it. I always say he's like the most likable pedophile because they say he's like air quotes child murderer, but come on, you know, like even in the remake, they really lean into that aspect, which I guess props to them for like, hey, you acknowledge it. But I'm like, now nobody likes this dude.
Yeah.
You know, we all want to see Welcome to Prime Time, bitch, in the quips. That's what's fun about him. But when he's a child murderer, it's not that fun. You know,
we all forgot that part of it because he was a cool baddie. Like he was very quotable. You know, you can always tell Halloween time, like how good of a job they did at creating their baddie because everyone wants to dress up as that person.
Yeah.
But we all, it's interesting because they made him so cool or somewhat likable in that regard. We forgot that he was a child predator this month. It's kind of like the Michael Jackson effect. He's still top 40. He gets played all the time. And like I always say, if you do something well enough, you have to really, really fuck up for us to disown you. You know?
There are people that like, I love R. Kelly. That's not right? me. It wasn't my music, but we just talked about Thriller on one of our Patreon episodes. So sorry, it's behind a paywall, everybody. But we covered Thriller, that video, and I made the case of it's important to horror, even though this guy is, you could allegedly, you know, did some heinous shit.
Right.
And I'm on the side of he did it. But it's also like directed by John Landis, who did American Werewolf in London and Blues Brothers, one of my favorite movies.
Right.
But it's like that video was probably people's first foray, some people, into horror. And like that's as far as some people will go because some of that is scary.
Yeah.
And it was just on MTV, and I think it was Showtime or whatever. But like that video, you could do the dance and not know that it, what it's from, you know?
Right.
Again, it's the when you do ee in the you shower.
Know it's psycho,
yeah.
Even if you haven't seen the movie, that's what's great about it. So you build in one hook like that,
mm-hmm.
and your shit's going to live forever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the, you know, it's part of the key of being a cult classic. And, I always like on the other topic, like kind of, canceling or disowning people based on, you know, what they did otherwise, how good their thing. Mm-hmm. I always wonder like how he would have treated Hitler if also he had created the Reese's peanut butter cup.
You know what I mean? That's a good premise.
Like, would it have taken longer to, hopefully not, but you get the premise. Yeah.
There'd be people like, man, that guy's terrible. They're screaming that on their porch and they go inside and they're like, I'm going to have one of these Reese cups.
Yeah, I'm still going to buy a Reese cup.
Yeah, it's that interesting conversation of separating the art from the artist, because I think there are certain people in whatever genre, I'm like, God, they're a master at their thing and a monster at their thing, you know?
Yeah, there's been so many. Now, do you have, I don't think I've asked you this yet, what, like an all-time favorite horror movie?
Yeah, it would be Halloween. So, like, the original 1978. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm in a room. I think people will watch the video too, but my lighting's not great. But it's full of posters and figures and stuff like that. But Halloween would be a favorite of mine, just because I think it's such a great movie. And it's a simple premise of this guy is after this babysitter. It was originally called The Babysitter Murders.
Yeah.
I have Michael Myers nightmares, like probably maybe once a month. It's a nightmare where he's chasing me. And of course in a dream, you can never get away, or a nightmare.
Right. Gun never works. For some reason, it'll never fire or whatever. Yeah.
I'm running, but then when I run in a dream, it's never full speed. It's just, I'm on one of those airport walkways going backwards or whatever.
Right, right.
But that, like, from a young age, that's what scared me. And I think we gravitate towards what scared us as a kid, either to stay away from it, or some people are like, this is fun.
Right.
You know, and I don't particularly like to be scared, but I think it's, I don't know what it is about the horror genre that I really like, but it would be Michael Myers for sure. Other favorites I have, there's one called It Follows. It's set in Detroit, and it's one that's divisive because people think it's stupid, and I think it's great. But it's the basic premise is that it's a sexually transmitted ghost phantom thing.
Already love it. Already love it.
So if I had sex with you, which I might do again, Todd, and I had the It Follows, then you would have it, and then you pass it on to somebody else. But if it kills the person that you had sex with, now it's coming back to you. It kills you. It comes back to me. And the carrier, the active carrier, can only see this thing that takes the form of maybe your mom, maybe your neighbor, maybe a stranger you've never seen. So you'll be in a crowd, and if it's walking towards you, it only walks. So you could take a plane across the country and be fine for however long, but it takes the form of anything. And again, the soundtrack plays a big part. It's by a guy named Disaster Piece. But I really love that movie.
I already love the premise of it. I mean, geez, sexually transmitted diseases are scary enough. And all they did was said, okay, what's something that's really scary that's real life to us? And then they blew it up by a million.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a great recipe for creating a movie like this.
And that's the simple premise, is that it's sex. But I would argue that it's death. Because
trying to escape death.
Death is always looming. It's never going away. We just dodge it momentarily.
Yeah. Yeah. We put it out of our mind, but it's always right there.
Yeah.
But being someone who was arguably at their sexual peak when AIDS was at its, you know, height,
mm-hmm.
like it's really like knowing like in your head, oh, if I fuck, I will die. Mm-hmm. Like that's because you at a certain age, you know, now I'd be fine. I'd be like, I very rarely want to fuck because I'm so old. But back then it was a big deal to me. My life pretty much revolved around it. But to know that it also, there was a decent chance you could get mm-hmm. something that would kill you.
Yeah.
So I love the premise. I love dissecting like where these ideas come from now. And I'm sure you do too. And to me, like I'm jealous of that person for coming up with that.
I think it's a great premise. And then other people will be like, it's just an STD thing. Even if it is, I think it's still cool.
Yeah.
It's at least cool. Unique, you know?
Right. It does take a certain personality, even like I'm not a super fan of the genre like you are, but yeah. to be a person who can appreciate it and why it works and why people are super fans of it takes a special kind of person. So I definitely get there was a big segment of our population and it's like, oh, it's fucking stupid or whatever.
Yeah.
But those people we hate to have at parties anyway.
They're not. Yeah. They weren't invited. And if they are, who told you about this?
Right. Exactly.
And there's like, you know, there's a little bit of everything in horror, I think, for people. You know, there's the true crime aspect of horror of Silence of the Lambs, I think, is the only horror, quote, horror. They call it a thriller, but one Best Picture, I think it was. So there's like, that's a little closer to reality, or Son of Sam.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's a little more like true crime-esque stuff where... Or there's like something like The Strangers. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yes, I have.
Where it's Home Invasion. Home Invasions to me are the scariest. That's the scary genre because we all live at home.
Yeah.
And okay. if you can't be safe at home, then where can you be safe?
So they're taking things that are scary and of themselves as crimes. And then you elevate it to kind of a supernatural level almost, or...
Have to be supernatural. If you don't do supernatural, we're watching it at home probably.
Yeah.
So really, that guy's right outside the door right there.
Right. Seven, I think, could be considered almost a horror movie.
Yeah.
Even though it's technically, I guess, a crime thriller, but like it's very morbid and very, you know, I think it crosses a line where you could consider it almost a horror movie.
Yeah. Zodiac was the one I was thinking
of. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that you get that true crime aspect of the guy's got to solve the case, and sometimes you get a good whodunit. Scream is a great whodunit, and kind of changed the genre of 96. Then you could Scream was like everybody was in like a flying V on the poster, and then if you look at the movies after that, Todd, you'll see Final Destination, you'll see The Faculty. Everybody's in that flying V like they're geese. It's like, that's how important that movie was, is they all got we all stole the poster for
it. That's interesting. You know? Yeah, yeah, yeah. See, this is all shit people can get broke down for them if they listen to your podcast.
Probably way too much and more than you wanted to know.
I'm going to become a huge fan of this show, by the way. All right, so one thing I wanted to talk about is... Halloween, for instance, the OG, the fact that it's still timeless and it was made, what'd you say, in
1978, yeah.
So many movies, like, here's a good example. My buddy, comic, I think you know, Nick Anthony.
Yeah, I met Nick. I'm not buddy-buddy with him, but I like him, yeah.
Yeah, he was over, he spent a week here, and we just both got to talking about how much we love the movie History of Violence.
I've never seen that.
I was like, let's watch it, dude. You know, I haven't seen it in a long time either. And we got about 20, 25 minutes in and we were like, oh boy, this isn't one of those timeless movies. Like everything about it was, I guess, popular then, but we have outgrown it, you know, and it's now not a good movie. It does not hold up.
Yeah.
But you take a movie like Halloween, where I think people will be watching it 30, 40 years from now. And it still had the same effect as it did in 1978 when you watched it.
Yeah.
Am I looking at this as an older person and being skewed a little bit by that, by thinking people aren't making as many of those types of movies anymore? Or will I be proven wrong, do you think, 30 years from now?
I think they've tried to redo the formula. And there's a couple formulas there. There's Halloween. They've attached it to a holiday. So... Groundhog's Day comes around. What movie do we watch?
Right.
Groundhog's Day. There's certain movies.
A Christmas Story at Christmas. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that's, we all are familiar with most of the Christmas classics because once a year they're on and we might watch them. But I think that's a good thing about Halloween, as why it was successful, is that it's attached to a holiday. Then you've got April Fools. You've got all these other spinoff movies that had nothing to do with Halloween, but it's attached to a holiday. You've got, I think it's, like I said, it's a simple premise of the guy's trying to chase this girl. There's a doctor, crazy doctor, coming in trying to stop everybody. The music, like I said, is great. I'm trying to, and they keep making them. Like, just a year or two ago, we had Halloween Ends. And something you'll notice when it's like the final blank or the final chapter, that means there's about eight more coming, Todd.
Right, right.
Like Halloween Ends. So just like in the past 2 days, there's been news of they're shopping around the rights for Halloween to make something new. And it's like they're still making them. I think the character of Michael Myers is fun because there's mystery to it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the fact that Danny McBride was able to do the, am I right? It was Danny McBride?
Yeah, it was Danny McBride and David Gordon Green, who he's directing the new Exorcist movies. But then they'll do The Righteous Gemstones.
Right.
Like, it's, they're into the comedy genre, but now they're into the horror genre as well.
Just like you. That's what I'm talking about. So I look forward to whatever movie you end up making.
But I shot a short horror movie in my house, and I've been scared to edit it, but my goal is to have it out this October.
Oh, nice.
It was during COVID lockdown, so I had a script in mind, but I'm like, how do I do something similar right here with nobody? That's when you see my other videos that I post online, the satire rants or whatever, it's usually me, because I'd have to wait for a guy to show up to be the other guy in the thing. Right. So I'll do it right now and it'll just be me. So like, that's how most of my career is, I've had tons of help, but it's mostly me when I do things, because I know it'll get done.
Yeah. And you're reliable.
But unlike that movie that I've had shot for 2 years and not edited because I don't want to see me act, it's like, then I can only blame me, you know?
Right, right. Well, I do think, like, it beyond obviously brilliant marketing, whoever decided to call it for, you know, name it after the holiday and all that stuff. Two, I think, like, they just said, hey, this is what's scary about it. Let's stick to that. And they didn't get too much outside of that, because that can date your movie. If you get too caught up in, you know, the language that you're using of the era and all these things that maybe help it in the present, it might cause your movie to get dated after. Cause I just watched it probably. Well, I watched it last Halloween. Mm-hmm. My wife and I always watch it every Halloween and I enjoy it every time. I've probably seen it 50 times.
Yeah.
And I still find it, you know, scary, and it doesn't date itself. So I think you're right. John Carpenter, obviously there hasn't been too many of John Carpenter's.
Yeah.
Ever.
Few. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're such a big John Carpenter fan. I tell you, my favorite personal movie, maybe outside of Halloween, is Vampires.
Oh, I like that. Was like one of those HBO movies. We never paid for it, but it just came and we never
like
said anything.
Yeah, like in the heyday of HBO was the only premium version of television we had.
So that was, I watched that movie a bunch, and I just rewatched it the past few years, and I still like it. And it's weird to see what's his face, the lead in it,
James Woods,
be a tough guy, because I never saw him as a tough guy.
Yeah, he weighs 117 pounds, first off. But he's this, and he's, I think he's like 5'5", but somehow he's this badass vampire slayer. And also one of the
Baldwins.
Lesser known Baldwins that I don't know that we've ever seen again in any movie. But and John Bon Jovi as the lead vampire. I mean, that's a winning recipe.
Hey, dude, you know, and like when, you know, you're cool when you call a priest Padre.
Right.
And any movie that where the guy's calling the priest Padre, that guy's cool.
I love it. Like, it's one of my favorite old, I don't know, it's a campy, you know, just whatever movie, but I can watch it over and over and over again.
I think the other big one that people would say is when you look at the list of greatest horror movies of all time, they'll probably put Halloween in there, but I think they'll also put The Thing with Kurt Russell. Have you ever seen The Thing?
I will agree, one of the best horror movies of all, one of my favorite. Mm-hmm. Now, sci-fi, horror, it kind of, it's both.
Yep.
And that's probably why I like it so much.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, that's a brilliant idea. I don't, and I, sometimes I, you know, now I learn more and more about screenwriting. Sometimes I'm like, oh, that's a brilliant idea. And then my buddies will be like, well, yeah, that was a Japanese movie first and they stole it. But, you know, so I never know what the origin is, but it's such a great concept. You know, you're stuck in the Arctic. And it's just, for one, brilliant for filmmaking because your budget can be smaller, less people in it. But there's just something about being trapped there while this thing is within you. And
the thing could be anybody. It's a whodunit, like Scream.
Yes. It's a murder mystery, but to it's a monster. And then this monster's from outer space, so it's sci-fi-ish. I feel like that's one of the best. I should say that's my favorite Carpenter movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you said that, I wouldn't be upset with you. I think you're wrong, but no.
Yeah. Have you seen the series? Because let's bend the genre a little bit. This is a recent series. I think it came out at the beginning of COVID, maybe, or right before COVID hit us. Preacher.
No. And I've heard that's a great graphic novel. And it's unfortunate that time is finite because I have a stack this high, it's off the camera, of stuff I need to watch and listen and read. But yeah, I've heard it's great.
Yeah, check it out because I'd be interested to see what you think about it because I just almost feel like it was, you know, Seth Rogen, obviously, it's like it just got the perfect amount of high.
Okay.
And just wrote and wrote and wrote. And
yeah,
it's so funny. Yep. Everybody in it's awesome. So it's, I really enjoyed it, but it is comic booky. Yeah,
we'll have to watch it because this is a Seth Rogen is a crush of my wife, and I've realized that most women I've dated, their crush is always Seth Rogen. So I don't know. I'm like the great value Seth Rogen. I don't think I'm as funny or as handsome, and I don't even know that I would say that guy's handsome, but apparently I'm Seth Rogen handsome, which is offensive to me. But
but it worked for her. That's all.
Hey,
that's all that matters.
I'll just just laugh like him. So,
you've been married for how long now? What?
It'll be 4 years. October 13th, we had a Halloween wedding. Even.
Oh, nice. My new marriage is October 22nd.
Okay.
So just a few days behind.
Similar.
You. Yeah. All right. So are you to the point where you're thinking about kids? Where do you stand on that?
No, we're not. I don't think we're going to have kids.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. No. Because I was going to tell you not to. That was going to be my advice.
And I've met your son.
Right. And I love my son. But, you know, if I had to make that decision at your age, whether or not my son was going to be a son, there'd be no son probably. That's just... Because, you know, you give up your dreams at that point. And fortunately, my dreams didn't get a start until after my son was already pretty much entering adulthood.
Yeah.
And so I'm so jealous of you. You started so young as a creative force and talent in this industry that I'm so jealous of that because you're a lot younger than me, but you're like a veteran in my eyes, you know. And so I'm jealous. I wish I could go back in time. No, I'm not going to say that because I my son's the biggest thing I ever was part of. But I also probably would be super famous if not for him. So anyway.
There's still time. And the thing that I liked about you, you have a background. You lived a life before you lived this life. And it's one we talked about on the field trip where people want to get a peek into true crime. Not everybody's a cop. Now, but not everybody's seen a real crime scene. Not that you would even want to after you saw it. But you have, starting late, you had so much to talk about and you've had a backlog of stories and personality. There's like even when you look at Rodney Dangerfield, started late, selling siding and writing jokes and putting it in a bag. Mm-hmm. Or one of my favorite comics that most people wouldn't know is Ron Schock. Are you familiar with Ron Schock?
Uh huh.
There's like a 5-minute video of him on YouTube of his backstory. And it's like, I was studying to be in a seminary to be a priest. And a year later, I was in a chain gang in Louisiana. I'd fallen in with a bad crowd is what he's like. So he was a safe cracker. He worked for the mafia. He was in the army. He would like he didn't hit till 50 or 60, whatever it was. But it's like man, this guy lived a life. And that's what I didn't have when I started stand up when I was 16, as I hadn't done much. Right. So, and when you're doing that, it's like, what am I going to talk about? The standardized test. So, and who gives a shit about that? So right. I think there's positives and negatives to starting early and late, because you have a treasure trove of stories and stuff to talk about, you know?
Yeah. But conversely, you're so in your groove right now, and you've achieved a lot of success. And in the last couple of years, you're getting to touch and feel and experience the fruits of your labor, because mm-hmm. you've been at it a long time. So why digress and pop a kid out and have to, you know, worry about that shit? Right, yeah. Just keep mm-hmm. the meteoric rise, meteoric. Yeah,
try.
So I wanted to ask you specifically about plans past the short, right? Are you mm-hmm. are you writing screenplays constantly, or do you have just a litany of ideas? Because I see you as a filmmaker at some mm-hmm. point.
I will lie and say I'm writing all the time. No, I I want to get this thing edited and out, and I think it'll be on YouTube for free. Just, and it was like, that's the whole idea to doing a short, whether it was what I'm doing now or the ideas I had previously, was to see if I could do it. And we all have, you know, a movie studio in our pocket, which is our phone.
Right.
Or we all have the tools. The only thing that's stopping us is us. And, you know, most times it didn't get done because I didn't do it. It's, you know, it wasn't somebody else. It's because we could go do it, but we're just lazy or scared.
Right.
Or
right.
one of the two. So I have definitely ideas that I would like to get done, and my first priority is this short. But I don't know if you've had something where you're like too scared to even crack open, where you're like, I don't want to fail, you know?
Yeah.
But I think going into your fear is how you grow as a person and artistically. Like over lockdown and pandemic stuff, I took acting classes on Zoom right here at this desk. And I'd never done acting, but my teacher was in LA, and I would IMDb everybody else in the class, and they had an IMDb, which is impressive yeah. in its own. And I would recognize some people in the class, and I'd be like, what are they doing here? and also, what am I doing here? Like, right. So it was like learning to act, whether it was on Zoom. I think there's still something you can learn and to garner from that. Or I did screenplay writing classes, and just you don't have to stop learning or growing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's, I always say, like, there's nothing you can't do. Like mm-hmm. when I look back, there's so many things that I have already done that, you know, if you'd have caught me at age 32 and said, you're going to be able to do these things one day, I would have said, no, you're an idiot. There's no way I can yeah. do that as a simple Hill Jack cop in mm-hmm. central Indiana, but yet done them. So I'm kind of the same opinion as you. Like, that's my philosophy. I'm gonna learn how to screenwrite. And yeah, of course I'll get a movie made one day, mm-hmm. or, you know, I'll get a documentary on Netflix. Watch me, you know, maybe not, but it's definitely, now I view it as something, everything's tangible now.
Yeah. And it's like with the movie studio in your pocket, you can do it. Maybe it's like most things don't have to look the best. They don't have to be 4K, 8K. They just have to be good enough to where it's tolerable to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Then that's just quality. The, right. the rest of it is on you to deliver a good story or whatever it is. And I think it's, I have, you know, aspirations to write and direct, and I like comedy, but what's interesting to me more recently is the horror stuff. You know, Jordan Peele was a comic and still is. But now he's making his name in horror. And yeah. If anything, at least I could say I did it, you know. I uh-huh. think it's, you go where you have fun. Because I think when you have fun, the audience has fun.
Exactly. And, you know, if nothing else, too, like they say, it's the easiest market. Like, more things sell horror than any other mm-hmm. genre, because there's so much room for low production products. Mm-hmm. Like, it's part of the charm within that genre for a large market base. So I think it's great, and I think with your mind behind it, You would make the type of horror movies I'm into. Like, that's...
I'm going to make a fuck ghost. Part two. I'm going to take an idea.
what are we going to do? How about a ghost comes out of his dick? Like, yeah. Like, fucking storyboarding that one. So yeah. Much fun. Jesus.
That'd go straight to Tubi, and there'd be a market for it. So.
Right? Or Freevee. Anything's possible now.
Yeah.
Dude, thanks for joining me. I've had so much fun. We needed to catch up anyway, so mm-hmm. getting to do each other's shows like this, it's a real treat for me.
Yeah, I don't know when this will be out, but your episode is out now on the field trip. And as I mentioned, they're coming to get you is usually every Monday.
Nice.
There's a back catalog of like 50 episodes. So.
Oh, geez. You guys can binge it forever. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the re-release of Here We Go. We were 7 episodes in, and then life stopped me from doing it. You're mm-hmm. you're the first guest on the new version of this, and we'll make sure we stay regular because now I don't have to listen to anybody else except myself. Everybody, check out They're Coming to Get You, the mm-hmm. greatest podcast title of all time, and probably... knowing Brent's one of the best podcasts out there that you never heard of, so pass it around.
Thanks, man. Good to talk to you.
See you, buddy.
Here we go, here we go.